This is Press Play on KCRW. I'm Madeline Bram. As former President Jimmy Carter enters the twilight of his life, he's 98 and now in hospice care, we are reflecting on the legacy and achievements of our 39th president. Today, what may be the biggest accomplishment of his presidency, the 1978 Camp David Accords.
The questions that have brought warfare and bitterness to the Middle East for the last 30 years will not be settled overnight. But we should all recognize the substantial achievements that have been made. One of the agreements that President Sadat and Prime Minister Begin are signing tonight is entitled A Framework for Peace in the Middle East.
Egyptian President Anwar Sadat and Israeli Prime Minister Menachem Begin shared the Nobel Peace Prize that year for brokering a lasting peace between Egypt and Israel. We're going to look back on Carter's role in those peace talks now with Kai Bird, Pulitzer Prize-winning historian and author of the 2021 biography, The Outlier, The Unfinished Presidency of Jimmy Carter. Welcome to Press Play.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Great to have you. Well, let me note that Carter also received a Nobel Peace Prize, but not for that. It was for his work after he left office. So I'm wondering why he wasn't included in the one that Begin and Sadat shared.
Well, I think it was a diplomatic decision on the part of the Norwegians, but he certainly deserved it. You know, it would not have happened without Jimmy Carter and his personal diplomacy and his relentless stubbornness to try to make these two guys talk to each other.
Well, he had pretty much zero foreign policy experience when he came into office, and he had only been to the Middle East once before he was president. Why was this so important to him? Why did he decide to take this on, the most difficult issue when it came to, and still the most difficult issue when it comes to foreign relations?
Well, I like to point out to people that Jimmy Carter is probably, without a doubt, the most intelligent, the most decent, and the most hardworking president we've had in the 20th century. But he was, as part of his sort of born-again Southern Baptist outlook, he understood that once he achieved power, he had to use it righteously. And he, of course, had a lifetime reading the Bible, and he thought of it as the Holy Land, and he really wanted to settle this conflict. And he managed to pound out a treaty and bring peace to Egypt and Israel. And the treaty has more or less held. It's a cold peace, but it is peace. And he gave Israel a great gift. He took Egypt off the battlefield. Mm-hmm. That's been the case for the last 40 years.
Well, as you say, it was not easy. 13 days of incredibly fraught negotiations with both camps in their own camps and not really speaking to each other. Just as background, you have Begin, who was one of the founders of Likud, so conservative, and Sadat began the 1973 Yom Kippur War against Israel. So you don't have a lot of love lost between the two of them. What was Carter's trick to get them to first come to Camp David in the first place and second agree to sit down and hammer out this landmark agreement?
Well, he extended invitations to both men, and Sadat decided to accept, and that sort of pressured Begin into reluctantly accepting. But Begin came thinking that he wasn't going to have to agree to anything. But Carter, realizing that they were speaking past each other, he put them in separate cabins, and then he shuttled back and forth and asked Sadat what he would agree to, and then he would shuttle back over to Begin and get Begin to say, well, I would agree to this. And it went back and forth for 13 days, and the negotiations broke down numerous times, but Carter wouldn't let them leave. He literally told Sadat at one point, you can't get on that helicopter. If you do, you will be destroying my presidency. Hmm. And likewise, he went to Begin, and when Begin was determined to leave at the end without an agreement, Carter showed up in his cabin with photographs of the Camp David sessions and signed them in the name of Begin's grandchildren. And this, of course, was a calculated move to make Begin understand that what he was walking away from was an opportunity for peace for his grandchildren. This brought tears to Begin's eyes, and he decided to spend another day negotiating.
But you argue that Begin essentially double-crossed Carter when it came to the settlements in the West Bank. Can you elaborate on that?
Well, Carter believed that he not only got a separate peace achieved between Israel and Egypt, but he also believed that he had gotten the agreement of Begin to take steps towards Palestinian autonomy and self-rule.
The framework document proposes a 5-year transitional period in the West Bank and Gaza, during which the Israeli military government will be withdrawn and a self-governing authority will be elected with full autonomy.
And Begin came out, signed the treaty, and never signed the side letter, and always insisted that he had never agreed to this. Carter looked at his diary notes and memos and said, no, I have it here. He agreed. So there's a sort of lingering suspicion on Carter's part that Begin had betrayed him, had agreed just so that he could get what he wanted from Egypt, a separate peace, and then walk away from the larger settlement with the Palestinians.
And that really angered him for many years, if not decades. And he actually wrote a book called Palestine, Peace, Not Apartheid, which is a very provocative title, got tons of blowback.
Right.
I want to play a clip from an interview he gave to Steve Inskeep on Morning Edition back in 2007.
Apartheid is a word that is an accurate description of what has been going on in the West Bank. And it's based on the desire or avarice of a minority of Israelis for Palestinian land. It's not based on racism. This is a word that's a very accurate description of the forced separation within the West Bank of Israelis from Palestinians and the total domination and oppression of Palestinians by the dominant Israeli military.
When that came out, again, that was in 2007, so not too long ago, he was widely vilified, condemned even by people like Bill Clinton and Nancy Pelosi. Members of his foundation, the Carter Center, resigned in protest. He was just raked over the coals.
No, but this is classic Carter. He is a politician who was willing to take high political risks in the cause of what he thought was righteousness. He understood how explosive the word apartheid was. He was saying not apartheid in the title, meaning this is a warning. If you continue to build settlements in the West Bank, Israel is going to be taking the road towards apartheid. And look where we are this many years later. It's looking pretty bad. It's looking like apartheid. And the two-state solution is, if not dead, it's fast receding. And this has terrible consequences for the future of an Israeli democracy, because how are they going to rule over millions of Palestinians who want the right to vote? And so this will affect the whole future of Israel, and Carter is looking like a prophet these days.
Well, ultimately, his achievements when it came to Middle East peace with the Camp David Accords were overshadowed by the hostage situation in Iran. That happened just about a year or so, like a little over a year after the Camp David Accords were signed. And can you talk about how that came to define Carter as really a failure of a president? I think when people think of President Carter and they think of foreign policy, they think only of that and think of it as a failure.
Yeah, they remember the failed helicopter rescue mission. It wounded Carter's presidency deeply. But again, this is a politician who could have done the easy thing, which was to respond with military force. But Carter believed that it would have gotten at least some of the hostages killed, and he was unwilling to do that. So he was willing to risk his own presidency to save the hostages. And eventually he succeeded and negotiated a release. But it only happened on the day that Ronald Reagan was inaugurated.
You talk about Reagan's campaign manager, who later went on to run his CIA, Bill Casey, as perhaps carrying out what people have long suspected, and that was secret negotiations with Iran to keep the hostages through the election. What is your evidence that he may have actually done that?
Well, it's been a mystery for decades now, but the allegation is that Bill Casey, in the summer of 1980, disappeared for a few days after attending an academic conference in London, flew to Madrid, Spain, and met with the representative of the Ayatollah Khomeini, and essentially told the Iranians, you know, I can give you, my candidate can give you a better deal than your hated Jimmy Carter. This is, you know, an outrageous allegation, true. And no one could find Casey's passport in question, his diary in question. But there is now good evidence in the form of a memo from the H.W. Bush presidency. And the memo says, our embassy, American embassy in Madrid, reported in a cable that Bill Casey is in town for purposes unknown. So that seems to be pretty much of a smoking gun to verify that Casey did indeed go to Madrid, something that his supporters deny that he had ever done. And it suggests that there was a deal, a Republican attempt to engage in private diplomacy that actually prolonged the hostage crisis. It's a terrible scandal.
And illegal.
Yes.
Had he not done that, had that not happened, would the hostages have been released before the election and quite possibly saved Carter's presidency and ensured another term?
Well, who knows? You can't predict what did not happen. But it's clear that the Carter administration had the makings of a diplomatic settlement in place. And this signal to the hardliners around the Ayatollah Khomeini perhaps gave them political ammunition to resist a settlement a little bit longer and to sort of, you know, stick it to Jimmy Carter. And if so, you know, it's an outrageous black mark on the Republican Party and the Reagan administration.
So getting back to Jimmy Carter, your incredibly comprehensive account of his presidency is called The Unfinished Presidency of Jimmy Carter. Did he view his work on the Middle East as unfinished?
Oh, he did. He was very frustrated. He thought he had gotten the first steps towards Palestinian self-determination. And so, believing that he had sort of been betrayed or lied to by Begin helps to explain why Carter spent the next four decades trying to persuade the Israelis not to build settlements, trying to engage with Yasser Arafat and persuade him to negotiate with the Israelis. It's a remarkable history of an obsession for peace. And Carter, I think, you know, even at the age of 98, he still believes that someday these people need to learn how to live in peace together.
Well, looking at the current government with right-wing extremists now center in it and talking about a Jewish-only state, it doesn't seem very close to his ideal.
No, sadly, things have gone downhill. And what he was warning about in his 2007 book with the controversial title Apartheid in it, alas, seems to be coming to pass.
I want to thank you so much for coming on the show today and talking about this aspect of Carter's presidency. It's fascinating.
No, it's a fascinating story. And at the end of his life, he's looking more and more like a prophet, but sadly, a prophet that was not listened to.
That's Kai Bird, Pulitzer Prize-winning historian and author of the 2021 biography, The Outlier, The Unfinished Presidency of Jimmy Carter. Coming up, Evan Kleiman is here. She has a recipe for St. Patrick's Day. It involves meat, so be warned. It's Irish stew. That's next on Press Play.